Good morning, everyone. My name is Max Gock. I'm from the School of Community Health Sciences at the University of Nevada, Las Vegas. I so appreciate this opportunity to be here with you today and to be part of this panel, as well as a conference that's centered on health and all policies, which is a really exciting topic. So my presentation today is really going to focus on learning lessons from emergency legal preparedness for health and all policies. But before I continue, I want to acknowledge Lainey Rutko from Johns Hopkins University for her thoughts and feedback on some of these ideas. So I have no relationships to disclose. As far as learning objectives, my goal with you is really to briefly describe health and all policies, to compare health and all policies and preparedness concepts, to discuss some mechanisms that formalize emergency legal preparedness, and then really to apply some of those lessons from legal preparedness to health and all policies. I want to focus on the legal mechanisms through which preparedness the preparedness field plans for emergencies and how they have potential ramifications for public health advocates interested in health and all policies. Applying these lessons isn't meant to suggest that they're new. In fact, a lot of jurisdictions are really starting to do many of these things as they're thinking about ways to implement health and all policies on the ground. So a little bit of background. I suspect many of you are familiar with these concepts already since this is the focus of the conference this year, but I did want to make sure to spend at least a few minutes talking about the social determinants of health and health and all policies in general. So we all pretty much agree, at least most of us in this room probably agree, that health is determined by many factors, right? Clinical care is important, as well as social and economic factors, physical environments, health-related behaviors. We could have conversations about the relative value. We probably have, or most of us have probably seen this particular model, which relies on the county, which is used in the county health rankings and is done by the Wisconsin Population Health Institute. But regardless of the relative value, where and how we live, learn, work, and play, right, matters. And partly because of the impact of social and environmental factors, physical environments, and related behaviors, health disparities persist, and people with less advantage tend to live shorter, sicker lives. So health and all policies, or HIAP, is really based on the idea that decisions in every sector have potential health impacts. For example, transportation decisions about how we build roads can affect rates of injury. Planning decisions about how cities are laid out can impact walkability and safety. Agriculture decisions can affect antimicrobial resistance, food safety, importantly, climate change. Education and employment decisions, of course, have so much to do with socioeconomic status and related health behaviors and outcomes. And housing decisions, just to name a couple examples, can affect asthma, lead poisoning, and allergies. Of course, many other sectors are relevant too here, and so the whole idea of health and all policies, which is not necessarily a new concept, is really to integrate health into some of these other sectors that typically don't think about health, and to integrate it into their policies, into laws related to those sectors, projects, programs, and really be thinking about health across the board. Health and all policies is an inherently flexible approach. At least most of the work that's been done so far suggests there isn't necessarily a right way to do it, or at least we don't know what that is yet. But it's really based on this idea of the collective impact model that we all need to be working together in order to make sure that we are addressing health and some of the complexities associated with the social determinants of health. And of course, very importantly, additional research and evidence is needed to help us understand which HIAP strategies are transferable across jurisdictions and whether it actually improves health. So really quickly, there are multiple ways of thinking about the role of law in health and all policies. Law can help institutionalize health and all policies. Jurisdictions like Rhode Island, the state of California, D.C., as well as some localities as well, have actually created specific agencies using law that are meant to focus on health advocacy, health equity, and health and all policies work. Law can also facilitate health and all policies. Many jurisdictions have ordinances like this in place where they actually encourage or sometimes even require departments of health to work across sectors with other governments to try to address issues related to health. law can integrate health directly into other sectors. Probably a lot of us are familiar with complete streets, which are often incorporated into city ordinances that try to promote access to streets for all different types of users, regardless of mobility. And then law can also, impede health in all policies. So most government is structured in a siloed way, and one of the factors that leads to that is the way that statutes organize state and local government. Preparedness, in contrast, focuses on a community's capacity to prepare for, respond to, and recover from public health emergencies that overwhelm routine capabilities, regardless of the cause. It's garnered unprecedented attention and funding since September 11th, as we're all aware, including billions of dollars of federal investment in state and local public health departments to work on this issue. And emergency-related efforts typically center on planning for emergencies, exercising plans, responding to real events, recovering, and then learning lessons from the exercises and responses. Public health preparedness efforts have elevated the nation's health security capacity through, for example, enhanced hospital preparedness, enhanced lab diagnostic capabilities, vaccination plans, as well as other examples. It also necessitated working with emergency management and other sectors on preparedness. So I wanted to take a minute and talk about why comparing these two is even relevant. There are certainly some pretty critical differences, right? So when we talk about funding intention and support, at least to date, there's been a lot of attention on preparedness, and I think health and all policies is just sort of gaining momentum or continuing to gain momentum. Both health and all policies and preparedness require acting in light of uncertainty, however. In the case of preparedness, uncertainty about if and when a public health emergency will arise, and for health and all policies, without knowing, for example, which implementation strategies are most efficient and effective, and whether health ultimately improves. Both also focus on multiple health outcomes, including injury, mental health issues, acute conditions, and effects on chronic disease. Both, at least in part, focus on populations that need additional attention due to disparities, and both also require a whole society collaborative approach in integrating the work of government agencies, communities, and the private sector. Law has been an important tool in preparedness. Legal mechanisms used in preparedness have potential ramifications for public health practitioners who are seeking to formalize health and all policies. Specifically, as jurisdictions consider institutionalizing health and all policies, there are some lessons from preparedness and what I think can be grouped into five areas. Prioritization through planning, assignment of responsibilities, funding, targeting vulnerable populations, and community-oriented approach. So the first area, prioritization through funding. Preparedness work has prioritized public health emergencies through centralized planning efforts. Statutes require jurisdictions to create, maintain, and follow all hazards emergency plans that establish concerted jurisdiction-wide emergency responses. Just a couple examples, statutes in the states of Kentucky and Nebraska do this. Statutes also, in some jurisdictions, at least 13, even require specific public health emergency plans. Legal provisions can require also the horizontal and vertical coordination of preparedness plans across different levels of government and among government agencies. And law also requires agencies with primary responsibility outside of preparedness to plan for emergencies, including requiring non-health and non-emergency management organizations like schools, public utilities, hospitals, nursing homes, and physicians' clinics to actually think about preparedness and to plan. So what's the relationship to health and all policies, or what are some of the lessons we can learn from this? Well, HIAP efforts can also use law to require health planning across sectors within and outside government, elevating the prominence of health across plans, policies, and decisions. For example, consistent with the Rhode Island model, jurisdictions could establish plans and memoranda of understanding across government and with outside partners to address the social determinants of health. Legal mechanisms, whether statutes, executive orders, or memorandums of understanding, could help coordinate social determinants work across and within governments, enhancing concerted cross-sector collaboration education. And finally, legal mechanisms could help integrate health-related planning beyond government agencies into the decisions of private sector partners. Statutes also create and establish authorities for agencies focused on emergency preparedness and coordination. Maryland's Emergency Management Agency, for example, administers the state's emergency management program and coordinates local emergency level agencies. Statutes also assign lead and support responsibilities to different agencies within the states. For example, in some states like Florida, an emergency management agency may assign responsibilities to other agencies and review all preparedness-related work. In addition, executive officials like governors ultimately by statute have the authority and responsibility for preparedness work. So when we're talking about applying some of these lessons to HIAP, one possibility is the direct creation of health and all policies focused agencies, for example, like the one I talked about in Rhode Island, DC, California, through task forces, work groups, or other entities, or the empowerment of public health agencies to directly plan and coordinate HIAP work through legal mechanisms. Law may also be helpful in requiring agencies, such as departments of transportation, education, or agriculture, to execute specific health and all policies related tasks within their respective sectors. Law can also be useful in explicitly requiring high-level elected officials to focus on health and all policies within a jurisdiction, as with the preparedness example. Preparedness has relied on dedicated funding streams. For example, CDC's Public Health Emergency Preparedness Program has funded much of the state and local public health preparedness work. Some of this funding has been accompanied with standardization requirements. Using specific preparedness definitions, the National Incident Management System, the Incident Command System, has been tied to receiving federal funds and has helped with standardizing preparedness across jurisdictions. Preparedness funding has also fluctuated, including recent reductions in federal preparedness dollars. So thinking about this in the health and all policies context, it may be helpful to garner appropriate and earmarked funding to agencies to engage specifically in health and all policies work following the preparedness example. Once successful health and all policies processes and strategies are established, this funding can be used to standardize health and all policies and provided in exchange for using or replicating successful processes and strategies. We can also learn from the fluctuations in preparedness funding that fluctuation should be both anticipated and mitigated through long-term investment in protected health and all policies funding. Identifying vulnerable population and planning for their needs is also central to preparedness. Though there may be room for improvement here, law has helped identify vulnerable individuals and populations. For example, again, Florida statute requires healthcare providers and government agencies to report information about individuals who may need evacuation assistance due to age or disability to emergency management agencies within the state. This information, in turn, would be used in an evacuation to provide assistance to those people. Laws also helped integrate vulnerable populations into preparedness plans. Federal laws like the Older Americans Act, for example, require area agencies on aging to coordinate preparedness activities with other government and nonprofit agencies and to recommend ways to address their needs in an emergency. Federal courts have also indicated that requirements in the Americans with Disabilities Act and other statutes necessitate sufficiently integrating the needs of individuals with disabilities into preparedness planning. So again, applying this to health and all policies, it may make sense to require and commit resources to study a jurisdiction's vulnerable populations and its specific needs to determine which populations are experiencing health disparities and how health equity can be promoted moving forward. Similarly, it could be helpful to make sure that across sectors, vulnerable populations are integrated into plans. And really quickly and lastly, preparedness is also espousing a whole community approach whereby government entities, private sector partners, and interested individuals collaborate on preparedness efforts. Typically, with an emergency management or public health agency at the helm. Perhaps part of the work will involve including the whole community approach in NIMS or other preparedness requirements. And again, applying this to the health and all policies context, we should continue to consider how health and all policies efforts can be integrated across the community, including government, the private sector, nonprofits, and interested parties. So I'm going to end there, and my contact information is here, and thanks so much.